They're all getting ready to leave. Oh, must be something else left on the agenda. Okay.
Let's see if I can see one there.
Yeah. We must have find something for us there.
But we were giving something away.
Mr. President, the short title of the next item. Ladies and gentlemen.
Come on in.
If those entering could enter quietly and those already here could somewhat be quiet, we'll move right along.
Again, the next item on the agenda is conditional use number 2074 filed on behalf of Quail Valley 1525 LLC. And the short title is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR-1 agricultural residential district for a commercial use as a therapy and fitness center to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 6.113 acres more or less. The 911 address is 1523 Savannah Road in Lewis. Thank you, sir. Ms. Cornwell.
Thank you. The Planning Commission, the Planning Office received the application October 28, 2016. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on April 6, 2017. A copy of those minutes were included into your packet. At their meeting on May 11th, the Planning Commission did recommend approval of the conditional use. They did recommend with 11 conditions for approval. Since the public hearing, the Planning Office has received a letter from the applicant. We also received 9 letters, additional letters in opposition, 5 letters that just require asked for conditions of approval to be placed on the application, and we received 8 letters in support. Thank you.
And those letters will all be made part of the public record.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any questions for Ms. Cornwell from Council? Appearing that there are none, Mr. Mandelis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. Good afternoon, President Vincent, members of County Council. My name is Glenn Mandelis. I'm an attorney with Baird Mandelis Brockstead with an office on Savannah Road in Lewis, not far from the property that we're going to talk about this afternoon. Joining me this afternoon are Rich Garrett, sitting here. Janet Honholt is behind him. They're the principals on the project. And Zach Kraut, professional engineer with David Bowen and Friedel, is also here today. Thank you again for providing this opportunity to describe our project, known as Gateway Motion and Fitness. It is a project on the north side of Savannah Road in the AR1 Agricultural Zoning District. It's just over 6 acres on the north side of Savannah Road. It is in the Level 2 growth area where growth is anticipated. We're seeking a conditional use to construct a 56,626 square foot building for therapy and fitness. And that number again is 56,626 square feet. That's about 10,000 square feet smaller than what was presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Midway Fitness is a fitness center that is behind the Midway Cinemas. It was purchased in 2013 by Mr. Garrett with the goal of having the cleanest, friendliest, and best value fitness center in the region. With that sort of a model, it led to increased membership pretty quickly. That led to a partnership with the Parkinson Support Program in 2014, which then developed into a relationship with the CAPE Center for Movement and Disabilities. Rich and Janet have become very passionate about Parkinson patients and things that they can do for them, and that is somewhat the inspiration for this new project. With the new project, they'd like to expand the current offerings and include in-house exercise options and add specialized weight machines, access aqua therapy, and create community space also for the surrounding community. So Gateway Motion and Fitness then is what is the new concept. And Gateway Motion and Fitness will be a gym, a wellness center, and a community center in a building, again, that is 56,626 square feet. The facility will be 32 and a half feet tall. I know you've probably seen or heard 40 feet being reported. The current proposal is 32 and a half feet. So the new building will house Gateway Motion and Fitness, and it will also have the CAPE Center for Movement and Disabilities. Just to give you an idea of what will be in the facility itself, there will be 4 racquetball courts, pool and a therapy pool, locker rooms with showers, steams, and sauna, massage therapy suite, expanded group exercise classes, including, for example, spinning, and a functional fitness arena.
I got a question. Sure. So we're looking at this new book, not the book that...
I'm sorry, Ms. Byrne, yes.
I mean,
yes.
The new book, I apologize. The new book.
So we can throw this one out.
Throw it out. Yes, sir.
So I apologize. Also submitted for the record was a new exhibit booklet the office received yesterday, as well as a new site plan that was received yesterday. And that was at your...
What happened to the 10-day thing? Is that like my old life or...
That is for Planning Commission.
It's your old life.
Well, it's hard to get up to speed showing up today getting a book.
That's a fair comment. We're going to go step by step what changed from the old plan and what is in the new plan. I will tell you now that we are meeting all the conditions that were imposed by the Planning Commission book for two, and I'll talk about those specifically. But I'll take a moment to describe the changes between the old plan and the new plan. All the changes, though, were directly related to conditions imposed by the Planning Commission.
Well, the old height is what?
40 feet is what was discussed previously. The new building is 32 and a half feet.
That's probably pretty important.
32
and a half? That's probably
important. I think Councilman Burton's comment, I think certainly getting this an hour ago, there's no way this council will act on this today. We'll defer it. I'm pretty sure of that. But we also need to allow time, I think, for the public to see what we were given an hour ago. They have no clue what is in my hand right now. So, I mean, continue on, but I will.
Is this normal? Does this happen?
No, it's not normal.
It happens very seldom.
Yeah, once in a while.
And it also, I'll just add it, sometimes it's a product of the timing between planning and zoning and county council. So if an applicant wants to just ride with what they presented to P&Z, you know, which is what everything is submitted in advance, it sounds like this applicant perhaps has reacted to P&Z to update their application. The problem is that there's not much time between when you hear from P&Z and when you get to county council.
Right.
There's more than an hour.
Right.
Well, I don't know. When was it submitted?
Yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
The planning office received it yesterday.
Okay.
I do appreciate you mentioning that, though, Mr. Robertson, because the conditions, we didn't have the conditions in written form till very recently. We did start to make revisions to the plans based upon the Planning and Zoning Commission's, the date that they made their decision and recommendation. But we didn't have the formalized written conditions till very recently, and that took the engineers a little while to get it together. But your comments are well taken, that the public has a right to see it and comment on it, and absolutely. So Midway, which has existed for a while now, has for some time been a community supporter. The new Gateway facility will continue to support the Children's Beach House and sponsor local sports teams, work with consortium kids and other community organizations. The Gateway facility will offer discounted rates for public services, such as police and firefighter. I want to take just a moment to speak about Rich and Janet, because oftentimes I think these projects come in and there's a concern that people are coming into Sussex County, rapidly growing area, beach communities, and they come to make a buck and leave town. That's not Rich and Janet. Rich and Janet both live in Sussex County. Rich lives close to this proposed facility's location. Janet lives on Gill's Neck. In addition to his work at Midway Fitness, Rich, sort of his day job, is the executive director at the Children's Beach House in Lewis. So my point is that they are invested in and part of Sussex County community, and that's why they're interested in getting this project right, and why there's a significant amount of revisions over the last proposal that was presented to planning and zoning. So the revised plan reduces the overall facility size by about 10,000 square feet. As I said, it's now 56,626 square feet. We were showing just over 65,000 square feet on a previous plan. The new proposal provides a 20-foot wide thick vegetative buffer from the villages at Five Points and Covey Creek. In a previous proposal, we had shown the extension of a tree band that was on the villages of Five Points property. We had agreed to extend their tree band based upon comments at planning and zoning, which were well taken. They said, you know, planning and zoning basically said this county council can't require you to do something on somebody else's property. So we have now created a 20-foot vegetated buffer from all the residential communities around us.
On your parcel?
On our parcel, that's correct. It includes an 8-foot fence, which was a condition of the Planning Commission. We're happy to talk about other things that might be more attractive than an 8-foot fence. We're willing to do the 8-foot fence, but if there's some other more attractive option, we would certainly do that.
Question on, excuse me, sure. That your fence is where? Is it going to be on your property line? Is it going to be, where is your fence? And as it relates to the natural buffer?
On the property line. Can you demonstrate over there, Zach, where it runs?
You can draw on them.
Yeah, that's right. Come on.
Technology.
We got hot tech stuff in here now.
Taxpayers have paid it.
And here's the, for the record, Zach Crouch with Davis Munford. And the 8-foot fence goes around the perimeter. Per the recommendations from planning commission.
That's a solid fence? What kind of fence is that?
It wasn't specified. So I would think if it's going to be a fence, and that's how come Mr. Mandela stated that if there's some other way to put the fence, because you know the residents in the back, if this does move forward, would be looking at an 8-foot fence, where I think it'd be more attractive to be looking at some vegetation since we are providing a 20-foot buffer now. So we can move the fence to the other side of the buffer, so they're looking at the vegetation. So it really doesn't matter wherever this council thinks that the fence should be located. We'd be more than happy to locate it where needed.
And based on input perhaps or not, what type of fence are you proposing? Seeing how that's not been answered yet.
Sir, you have to come to the podium.
This is Rich Garrett, for the record, one of the principals.
We had originally planned that it would be a open slotted attractive fence. It would look good against the green buffer zone. And then at the meeting of the public hearing meeting of planning and zoning, some of the residents requested a solid fence. So we're imagining a solid vinyl fence or something, which we will do if that's what we're asked to do, but I can't imagine wanting to look at that out of my back window either. So we're willing to be flexible on whatever this body decides.
Okay, thank you.
In addition to those revisions to the plan, we also reduced the parking from 322 spaces to 200 spaces. That was something, to the Planning Commission's credit, they recognized that this facility just simply didn't need the code required parking, so they suggested that we reduce it. We certainly were happy to do that. We don't feel that we need 322 spaces. So it's been reduced to 200 spaces, which allowed us to revise the site a little bit so that we could move the building away from the property line. We could move the parking further away from the property lines. That's largely because of that reduction in parking spaces. And importantly, it provides a lot more pervious space than the previous plan had. The height has been reduced from 40 feet to 32 and a half feet. So at this point, the revised plan meets all the conditions that the Planning Commission suggested. Those conditions being, first, that we be served by central sewer system. Next, that we be regulated by central water system. Next, that we have stormwater management and erosion sediment control constructed in accordance with the applicable state and county requirements. Next, that all roadway improvements be as per DevDOT. Next, that we have a landscape buffer. That's the 20-foot landscape buffer that I mentioned from the residential properties. Next, that we have an 8-foot tall fence that we have shown on this plan. Next, that we reduce it to 20 parking spaces. So we meet all those conditions but for two of them. The two I want to talk about are, first, the Planning Commission recommended a condition of a 40-foot setback from all property lines. We've achieved the 40-foot setback from all property lines except for the rear of the building. The rear of the building has a 30-foot, we show a 30-foot setback on the rear of the building to the rear property line. So there's still a 20-foot vegetative buffer before 10 more feet than the rear of the building. To accommodate the programming that they do inside this building, the large pool and other things, it was just almost impossible to find a way to bring it back any further than that. Now, I want to mention that if there is a project done in this zoning district, not as a conditional use, but as an AR straight project, the rear yard setback for that sort of a project is 20 feet. We're providing 30 feet on this project. So we're providing 10 more feet than would be provided in a straight AR zoned project. So So it's not the 40 that the Planning Commission recommended. It is 40 every place else around the perimeter.
To your point, though, if I may, AR would not permit this, so it's correct?
AR would not permit this facility, but it would,
right.
But it would permit...
Just to clarify, I mean...
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay,
right. Yeah,
just to
right.
clarify.
That's right. That's why we're here in a conditional
okay.
use.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Couldn't you have moved it another 10 feet away from the back property line? Maybe not had 40 feet next to the front property line or something?
For the record, Zach Crouch, Steve. I mean, that's, you know, and there again, apologize for getting us in just of yesterday, but just like we said, I mean, we got the conditions. We were trying to figure out exactly a way to make it work by reducing the building and with the program and in every, and so, and with the stormwater management and everything else. So with that being said, you know, the only area that is not the 40 feet is, of course, is this area right here. It was originally 15 feet, and we increased it to 30 feet. You know, when we were planning commission, it was 15 feet. We increased it to 30 feet. That allowed us to put the 20-foot buffer, planted buffer on the property. But as you can see, we need, for fire protection, you need 24 foot of access. So bringing the building any closer would, of course, you know, we'd be over property line. That's the only place where there's not 40 feet. So we increased it from 15 to 30. The buffer's there, the fence is there. And we located, we took as much of the parking as possible, still kept it out front so it would not be back near the residence. And we located the parking basically center of the land, you know, to the east. So this stormwater management facility, it's a bioretention area, so it's not going to be water. It's just going to be an open space to be mowed, and as well as infiltration here.
What are you looking for?
Okay, that's what I'm looking for right here. So I got it.
Oops.
You got two mouses.
So, with a little bit of color, you know, this storm, I mean, this is just, so, okay, that's even better. So this is what was presented to P&Z, just so that you're aware, Mr. Burton, Mr. Vincent, and everyone. So this is how it looked at P&Z. We had a 15-foot buffer, or a 15-foot setback. You know, we had all this parking. And based on the conditions that was presented from P&Z, we went from that. Where's the other one?
Should have been at the beginning.
The other color renderings on there?
Okay. It should have been number one and number two at the beginning.
Well, here, it's just...
That's what I got.
So here's the new one, which you can see the significant amount...
Where's the house?
Yeah,
where's the house?
Yeah, they left.
What's it? It's just an older area, for the record.
Yeah,
well,
that's fine.
I just wanted to point out that you can see the amount of impervious area that was decreased. All this parking in this area, this is infiltration. This is just infiltration. And we have a little bit of stormwater around here. We wanted to centrally locate the parking. So that we had 40 feet. Actually, 91 feet from the villages of Five Point. There's 91 feet here, and there's close to 56 on this side. The 40 feet on this side, we provide the 40 feet against here, which they're again a 20-foot buffer, which they're again before parking went right up to the property line with just a fence. So we condensed everything so it's centrally located to be as far away as from the property lines as possible. So to move the building any further way front, I mean, we would, unfortunately, we would not have the 24 feet for the fire fire access.
Got you. Is there 40 feet along the north side of the building, Zach, where there is no shrubbery?
No, that's 20 feet. It was 15 feet before we were able to shift it over.
I'm talking about to the left of the property there.
Right 20, there. 21 feet.
This here?
Yeah,
it's 20 feet. It was from 15 feet. I mean, the condition said from the residential communities, so the 40 feet. So based on the public input, I mean, all the concerns was, of course, in the development and on both sides, the north and the east, where it butts to developments. This property to the left is actually a conditional use, if I'm not mistaken. So,
but I'm confused. So 21 feet is the distance between the property line and the proposed building.
That is correct.
Earlier you said everything was 40 feet, no, other than the rear of the property.
We said the areas along where the residential units, where abuts a residential subdivision.
Right.
Is the 40.
Okay. Just want to clarify for the record.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. Yeah, I said that confusingly. You're right.
Okay. I'm listening. So to the right, if I may, at the end of the parking lot, what is the distance from the property line and the proposed edge of the parking lot right there?
40 feet.
So that is also 40 feet.
This is 40 feet right here.
And
with a 20-foot buffer, and this is 91 with a 40-foot buffer, and all this is 91 feet to the parking.
So let me ask you a question. Maybe you've thought of this, maybe you have not. Based on, it appears, based on the current testimony that, and a little bit of the feedback from those that are here present currently, the concern is the distance of the rear of that property to those homes currently. So, and you mentioned that you could not move that building closer because of the required fire lane, correct? Yes. The 24 feet.
And it's also the building. I just want to make sure everyone understands, we decreased the building.
No, I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you. So, but I have an idea. And just as a possibility, again, we're the idea guys sometimes. So is it possible? Can I?
Sure.
Because the bottleneck, I guess the microphone, sorry. The bottleneck is here, as you just testified. So if you took 10 feet off here and added 10 feet there, could you, at that point, move everything up a little bit?
We actually already did that. It's actually 10 foot shorter. Unfortunately, that's where the pool's at.
The pool, that's unfortunately what?
The pool's in that location. So the pool's located here.
Okay.
We've already removed 10 feet, and that's, to make it shorter. And that, they're getting to squeeze it as much as we can to pull it off the property line. As much as we can.
But you appreciate his help, though, didn't you?
Oh, yes, sir.
You do appreciate
it. I was thinking like you were thinking. Okay, just thinking.
It goes back to getting the conditions and trying to put the pieces together to size the building accordingly and to move everything off and to try to address the comments. But, we went from 15 feet to 30 feet off the property line, and, the buffer is now included with the 8-foot fence. And, of course, the reduction of parking, which is now not even close to the property lines at all. It's within 50 to 91 feet away, centrally located. And the only thing on both sides of the parking is stormwater features, which are just infiltration. They will not have water. They would be green space, and they would be mowed, but it's just for infiltration.
I guess the very bottom line, with the conditions set by planning and zoning, you can't build a building.
No.
That's a fair statement?
Fair statement.
Okay. Because you can't get 40 feet.
That's correct.
Can't build a building they want.
Yeah, well, yeah. The one screen right there.
Yeah, right.
That makes a little difference.
Okay. It all deals around, the type of programming they have for the building itself.
Sure. So of the 11 conditions, I mentioned there were two that we were struggling with. That's the first one. The second one is the hours of operation. The Planning Commission recommended, The Planning Commission recommended an hours of operation being from 5 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. and from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The general rule in setting hours of operation is that you can use zoning regulation to do that, so long as there's substantial evidence that doing so is necessary to address a health, safety, or welfare concern. The hours of operation that we would like to operate to be competitive with other facilities of this type and to offer the services to our clients at the hours that they like to do these sorts of activities would be instead on weekdays, we'd like to be operational from 5 a.m., the same starting time the Planning Commission set, to 11 p.m., which is 2 hours later than the Planning Commission recommended in its condition. And then on the weekends, rather than being open 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., we'd like to extend it additional 3 hours. I'm sorry, cut some off on the beginning, not open at 5. We would not open until 8 a.m. and then be open until 8 p.m. rather than 5 p.m. This is the type of facility that generally people park their cars and go into the facility. There's not a whole lot of exterior noise other than the occasional car door opening up and shutting and car coming in and going. This is not a facility that has planned, outdoor activities or those sorts of things that would generate a lot of exterior noise. So that's the second condition that I would like to at least have a conversation about and see if we can arrive at something that is more accommodating to the owner. So this is a conditional use approval, and they're not reviewed under the same rigorous standards as are the changes to zoning laws. The Steen case and the Gibson case made clear that where a use is permitted through a conditional use approval, there's already been a legislative determination that the use is appropriate for the zoning district. So because this is a conditional use approval, rather than a change in the zoning district or something along those lines, there's already been a legislative determination by this body that this type of facility is appropriate there. So long as we meet the requisite standards under the code, it should be approved. Now, you're certainly able to identify health, safety, welfare concerns and attach conditions to address those. But so long as the prerequisites are satisfied, it should be approved. From the Lewis City Limits to the Old Orchard Road, there's been at least 28 conditional use applications approved since 1980. Many of them are professional and medical facilities. This proposal is not inconsistent with the county's comprehensive development plan. In the planning director's memo, she concluded by saying, based on the analysis of the land use, surrounding zoning, and uses, the conditional use request to allow for a therapy and fitness center would be considered consistent with the land use, surrounding zoning, and uses. This revised
project... Can I hold you up right there?
Sure.
Ms. Cornwell, you heard what he read, your statement was?
Yes.
Was your statement referencing that, in your opinion, this type of facility would be okay in this location as far as the gym and exercise thing, but you were not referencing the physical size of the building?
Correct.
And then you read off 20-some conditional uses.
That's right. It's 28 conditional uses.
Can you show me one in the area that's this physical size?
We don't have the rendering that has all of them. Trying to think of what is along there that might be a...
All I did was add, size. So if it was there.
I think they're probably, it's fair to say there's probably not one as large as this facility.
And I guess the thing that kind of sticks in my, I'm just thinking about this. Most of the things, at least I think you're talking about, most of those things are either in maybe a redone home that was there, or something's been built there that looks some like a home or a house or a, the outside's got windows, it's got stucco, it's got a number of things on it. I mean, even your office building.
That's right.
I haven't seen the outside of this thing, but I'm gonna guess it's a metal building. It's just metal building.
A couple comments on that. First, the acreage that's provided here is much more than the acreage of most of the other conditional uses. So they didn't have the ability to build a larger structure, most of the other conditional uses. Secondarily, there is a rendering of the facility here. I know in the conversations that I've had with Rich and Janet, they are more than willing to consider attractive exterior options that will be more fitting with the community. To the extent there are some sort of condition that you can impose that would get us there, I'm certain they're willing to have that conversation.
I guess my initial thought is if it's approved, it needs to be something that certainly would look right in the area, not just a big structure of just all walls.
Not
whatever.
Just a standing seam metal building that has no architectural characteristics. Understood.
Thank you. Thank you.
So the reason, I guess to wrap it up, the revisions to this plan, I think, have come a long way to get it much more in conformity with what the Planning Commission envisioned. And I think, personally, I think the plan has become dramatically better than it was when we presented it at the Planning Commission. It satisfies all the legal standards, and we certainly hope to earn your approval. Mr. Crouch is here. I don't know if you want to address any more technical merits of the project. You've already addressed a lot of it, but
we wore him out.
No, I mean, there again, I mean, what we did in the whole issue of trying to develop something based on recommendations that the Planning Commission suggested was we got the conditions and we looked at the stormwater management, the parking, and the building to try to consolidate and also reduce the size of the building to still meet the requirements of the owner with the programming for the building. And I think we accomplished most of that, but unfortunately, based on the programming of the building, the 30 feet, and I wish we could have hit the 40 feet because I think it would have made some folks in here a little bit happier. But, you know, being able to move it 30 feet and also provide a pretty significant buffer for the 20 feet behind there, which was there definitely a concern at the Planning Commission. And it's just for the back of the building. Everywhere else we consolidate, you know, we pushed the parking. I actually kept all the parking out front that would allow stormwater management so that we centrally located the parking in the rear so that we're pulling away from the property lines, which there again was a concern, and provided an area which cannot be parked on, which is stormwater management, so no one can be close to that property, which there again provides more distance from the parking to the property line. So based on this latest revision and the recommendations of the Planning Commission, I think we have put something together that, there again, almost meets all the requirements except for a small portion of it. But there again, it goes back to Mr. Vincent's question. That particular building with the programming that the owner is designed for it, I mean, it's either that or with the fire access, I mean, we just couldn't build it there.
Thank you.
Is there any questions of counsel for the applicant or his representation?
Yeah, somebody can stand up there, attorney, I guess. I don't care. Just discuss why you feel, because as I read letters from opposition and some emails, the compatibility of this structure, the size and other things, why you feel that compatibility does meet an AR1 zone, which you're asking for a conditional use, and the emphasis is on permit. It's not really, you know, designed to be permanent zoning and change of zoning. Otherwise, you should come in for a change of zone.
Right.
But this is a permit. So just tell me why, or convince me that this is compatible.
Well, I think that area along Savannah Road is certainly redeveloping, as we've just discussed earlier, into more commercial-type uses. There's certainly medical along that street, and this facility seeks to accommodate certainly people with mobility needs and those sorts of functional disabilities. So we're hoping that this facility somewhat falls in line with
the use. I don't disagree with you on the use, but how about the size of the structure and the way it's squeezed in? It's kind of like it's you got just that little strip of land getting back to it, and it seems, you know, not your typical road frontage building sitting, you know, right up on the highway.
Well, I hope when it's ultimately constructed that you won't have the sense that it's enormous. First of all, it does sit quite a ways off of Savannah Road. You'll barely see it from Savannah Road given its location. Mm-hmm. The buffering now, since we were able to bring down the building to 32.5 feet and have 20 feet, a good 20 feet of thick buffering, then an additional 10 feet to the building, that gives you another 30 feet. So if you're standing 30 feet away, the building's 30 feet up, I mean, you're looking like this to get to the top of the building. So I'm hopeful that between the rear of the properties in Five Points and then the additional buffering they have, because remember, from the back of the lots in Five Points, then there's some additional HOA land before they get to the property edge of our property edge. So then there's an additional 30 feet from that. So Zach, are you able to say from the rear property line, given the HOA land and given the 30 feet buffer we have, do you know what that dimension is?
We measure this as
–
back of 69, lot 69, to the property lot was around 60-some feet. So you add the additional 30 feet until you're looking at 100 feet.
Mm-hmm. Refresh my memory, what's the buffer? I mean, that lot 69 appears to be the closest to the proposed building. And they obviously, I have no clue where their house is as it relates to the property line, but what would be a setback from that property line to where they could build? Property line, excuse me.
10 foot, I think.
Is it 10? The rear one. I don't know if the HOA has a different number.
Feet. Yeah, it could be 10 feet.
So here, and there
it looks like it is.
This is the old one, so.
But the house hasn't moved.
You can see, yeah, here's the house. There's like a 60-foot buffer here that is part of their development. And then, there again, this was 15, so now we've got 30. We doubled that. And we actually have the 20-foot buffer now.
My contention is, I think when you talk about these buffers, that would be fine if it's a buffer from a small structure from another small structure. But when you have a buffer of 30 feet from a large structure, it minimizes the benefits. So it just seems, I think it's the size. There's no question that what you want to do can fit on this property. I think it's just, again, the impacts and the compatibility of the surrounding area. And it is still an AR1 residential district. And we've got to be cognizant of that we're giving this permit in there. So again, I question whether how you can justify the compatibility because of size. Not so much uses, because you're right. There's some doctor's offices. I'm sure some of them give therapy, but I don't think anybody to this extent. So
right, and I would just add. I mean, modifying the building from PNZ. I mean, definitely helped me because reducing it from 7 feet. I mean, I'm sure there's some houses that are over 32 foot high. I mean, mm-hmm. A two-story house is. Making that difference makes a little bit of a difference.
I agree.
And I guess the other way I'd address it is, as I mentioned earlier, there's already been a legislative determination that this sort of facility is appropriate for that district under a conditional use. The question that you have to ask, I think, in your minds is there a health, welfare, or safety concern that is so great that it overwhelms the entire project and you have to deny it? If there are conditions that you can attach that address that concern to a degree that is reasonable, then the condition should be attached and the project should be approved. Otherwise, a denial would be inappropriate.
I'll ask Mr. Vincent if he could chime in on a response to that, because we pay you big bucks just for your profound comments. Let's see what you taxpayers are paying for.
Mr. Mandel is certainly representing his applicant and doing a good job on that. I would disagree with him in that he seems to suggest that there's a presumption that it has to be approved that we have to overcome if it's going to be denied. And I'm not suggesting denial or approval. I don't read the law quite the same way as that. And I think there's several factors that come into play. So I think he maybe overstates that to some extent. So.
In the Gibson versus Sussex County Council case in 2005, that court said if the project comports with the legislative standards, that is the legislative standards of being the use that is proposed, a conditional use that has already been said to be okay in this district. It says if the project comports with the legislative standards, the applicant is entitled to a rebuttable presumption. So it's a rebuttable presumption of a conditional use approval. So the presumption is, in fact, that we should be approved unless there's such an overwhelming amount of evidence as to a health, welfare, or safety concern that you say we just cannot approve this.
But Mr. Mandelis, that was also a case in which the Gibsons were looking to do, I don't remember if it was a duplex or a triplex, when there was townhouses all around there. I think that the question that council has is whether or not this particular application, the use and the scope of it, is the same. I think this is distinguishable from Gibson because of the circumstances that existed there. And we can argue the legal issues offline if we need to. But
the case has certainly had distinguishing qualities. But I think what this one comes down to, if we really want to boil it down to its bare essence, is that the building is large and people have concerns about the size of the building. Is the size of the building, does that create such a detriment to the neighbors, such an overwhelming detriment, that the rebuttable presumption is rebutted and you have to deny it.
Well, that's where we have our judgment.
Could property values be an issue to be concerned about from my point of view?
I think property values are always an issue in any land.
I mean, would the courts, you think, look at property values as part of the criteria on different things when we make these decisions, right?
Certainly, if property values go down, it is a welfare of the community concern. So I think it's a fair consideration. I don't think in this case it overwhelms the analysis.
Okay.
You have to be careful about property values for the benefit of the council and also the audience. When you get into conversation about property values, it can't be sort of just mere opinions. You really have to have
expert opinions
right. That back up the record to support that, if that's going to be a reason.
And I appreciate you saying that, because that is what the cases say. There has to be substantial evidence on the record that concern.
Why is this you stated that this is an okay conditional use, right? You said that this
is permissible.
Permissible.
Right.
So because it's a conditional use, it becomes permissible?
Well, what happened is when the zoning code was being put together, and it's been revised several times, I'm sure, but the county council, you all, say, here are some things that we know are good in this district. We know we like single-family homes. We know we like this. But then you say, but there are some other things that we think would be all right, but we want to have a little more oversight before they get approved. So if I walked into the building and licensing department and said, I'd like to build a single-family home, they'd say, show me your plans. And at the building and licensing department, they would say, yep, it meets the standards. Here's your permit. Go build it. No additional oversight from you all or from the Planning Commission. Conditional uses are different in that county council, when it was putting together the zoning code, said, okay, here's all the things we know we like in this district, and here are some things we think are appropriate for this district, in this case being a fitness and therapy facility. They said, we think that's appropriate in this district, but we want a little more oversight. So when the neighbors say it's too tall, we can twist their arm and get them to make it shorter. When they say it's too close, we can twist their arm to get it a little further away. So that's what. But when I say it's okay, there's already been a legislative determination that this use is appropriate for that district.
A fitness center, but not necessarily this fitness center, is what you're saying.
That's right. That's right. Okay. If you could identify a health, welfare, or safety concern that overwhelmed the rebuttable presumption that you should approve us, then that's right. This fitness center might not be the right one. I'm suggesting and arguing that there has not been enough substantial evidence on the record that overwhelms that rebuttable presumption.
Okay, let me.
Can I just ask a question, Ms. Cornwell? What we've heard that the zoning code says that, Mr. Mendels has said this, that the zoning code says that this conditional use is one that's articulated in the code. What's the category that this one falls under?
The residential, commercial, and all other businesses not listed.
So it doesn't specifically state that a fitness and a therapy center is a possible conditional use. It's the catch-all that we're working
Correct.
On. Okay.
Let's talk about the medical side of this proposal. Is there a contractual agreement between the owners and a medical establishment?
No, there's not with a medical establishment, right? You've got agreements. I mean, do you want to talk about the Parkinson's group and those, how you're going to interact there? I mean, I know you're not a med, not right, not a BB, not a any of that right now.
So when we started out with this project, we had support from BB Hospital, who wanted to partner with us and provide outpatient therapy through our building and in our center. And once the public opposition became clear, BB has backed away and said, we will consider this once it's built and it's established. So there's still room for them to be part of our project, but they won't enter into a contractual agreement until we actually have the facility. And I understand that perspective. Mm-hmm.
So there's really not a medical, there's, of course, if you work out in the gym, hopefully you get healthy and all that stuff, but there's not a health, safety, and welfare contractual agreement.
There's not a contractual agreement, but we're serving a lot of folks with Parkinson's disease, and there is another program in the community that does that started at our place and moved to another facility.
Sorry.
But Some of the folks with the most progressed Parkinson's are not able to physically access the ramp into that building, and then the walk from that doorway to where the classes are being provided. So we would have about 45 to 50 folks that would not be able to be served. And although we're not medical professions or professionals, we're making a huge impact on their lives. And that is a huge reason why we're here today and why we even started looking at expanding the gym. Other than that piece of the gym, we're fitting okay in our current facility. But when we started taking these folks and realizing what didn't exist for them, and then looking at the research and saying the really good thing for them would be to have a therapy pool, and you can't just have one pool because different conditions require different temperatures of water. So we need two pools, one with a higher temperature and one with a lower temperature. And that's how the whole project began to emerge. That's how we got to the design that we have. And that's how we then looked for a piece of property that was on the east side of one that would accommodate it. And you know that there's not a lot. And we were trying to keep the majority of our folks from having to cross the highway, because we know that a lot of them have conditions that make them at least insecure in driving, and several can't drive. So we're trying to make it as accessible as we can. And so the location, that's a big part of it. And we also wanted to be able to offer services that were easily used by folks at BB. So, you know, by being right there on that main drag, you know, it's easy for folks to get in and out. They're coming over there for therapy anyway. It just made sense.
Because it,
ladies and gentlemen,
I will ask you just once to be respectful of the people at the podium. If you can't be respectful, I will have you taken out of the room. Okay? When you come here to speak, they're going to be respectful to you too. Thank you very much.
Because in your new booklet, it says six doctors and three employees. Does that relate to anything now?
I need to look at it. It may be a hangover from the old proposal. And it may be the way that we were counting in the original traffic count, employees, staff counts.
It was based on the parking, so reducing the parking. So the original was based off of the staff and how the building was going to be used. That's how come we had 300 and some parking spots. And then we explained at Planning Commission that we don't need that many parking spaces, but unfortunately the code requires you to show that many. And that's when one of the recommendations was to reduce it down to 200. So that's what we did. But that was to come up with the parking spaces.
Okay, so the 288 in the new booklet is the old parking count of the 62,000 square foot.
288 is what's required per code based on the new building, because we reduced the building.
The new building being the new booklet?
Yes, the one that's right there, the 56,000 square feet.
Okay, because in this same thing, it says maximum building height less than 42.
Well, that's just per code. You know, we didn't.
But what you're saying today is the maximum height would be 32.
Right, but per code it's 42, but the actual building itself is 32.5 feet.
Okay.
I mean, that's the actual building, because they, you know, they got elevations of the building because they had to basically do a schematic of it to make sure everything worked inside of it by reducing it from the 67,000 to 56,000.
Okay, but that's a proffered foot high, 32.5.
Yes. So if that was a condition that this building cannot be over 32.5, then that would be great, because we know it works.
All right, let's talk about membership a little bit here. What does it take to make this work here?
We currently have just under 1,000 members, and we anticipate that the new facility would probably double membership, so we'd be at 2,000 members.
And the traffic count on 2,000 members, given the hours of operation, how does that work? I mean, I happen to be a gym membership holder, but I don't go.
There was a letter that was submitted by
Dalton. I know.
You better start going there then.
There was a letter submitted by Dalton.
It's obvious.
It should be, that Janelle, I think, which, you know, we went and met with Dalton on several different occasions based on the timing of their existing facility and also the medical use of this property. And a traffic impact study, it's within the area-wide study fee, so the developer would have to pay $6,800, but all that traffic was generated based on existing, because this is not a typical, you know, you're going to have folks come in the morning, you're going to have folks come in the afternoon, you're going to have folks come in the evening. So we took all those numbers and did a trip distribution for that. And there should have been a letter that would.
It's in the file.
Can you just clarify whether it's 6,800 or 68,000? Just for curiosity's sakes.
I'm betting it's 100.
I'm betting it's 100 too, and that upset me.
Should have included in the package.
Quick, or we're going to lose the audience.
Yeah, we'll find it. It should have been included, Mr. Burks. I apologize.
So they have looked at this entrance. Deldot has looked at the entrance, and they have said you can make a right out or a left out. You can do.
That is correct. We do have to add a protective left. There is a turn lane that'll be out on Savannah's Road, a protective left into the site.
Protected left being a concrete barrier in there or striping?
No, just striping.
All right.
It'd be a separate lane for storage and a left turn lane into the site.
So that gets widened right there?
Yes.
The road gets wide.
Yes, everything between our property and there's enough room in a decel lane into the property as well. We have a decel lane here, and then actually a bike lane too on Savannah Road.
Just on that 150 feet though?
No, well, it goes the front of our improvements. You can see the taper distance here. So this bike lane goes all the way down past, you know, the parcel Pete, and it goes all the way down to where the protective left is going up to Route 1.
So you're paving.
Yes.
Into the current grass.
Yes. Those improvements will include that. That is correct.
Okay. At this time,
more questions?
Just let me get the attorney. I'll get you on record. Just say, why not a change of zone? Tell us why.
Well, a couple reasons. I guess a change of zone in that area, first, it's generally AR in that area to begin with. For whatever reason, there's been conditional uses that have generally been approved. I generally prefer, if I'm in your shoes, to know what's going to go on the property. Here we're saying to you, if you give us a conditional use, there's one project and only one project that we will build, and it's this. A change of zone, of course, to a more intense zoning district provides a number of more intense uses that could be made of that property. So maybe a gym would be fine, but maybe the more intensive gas station or whatever it is that's also approved in that zoning district wouldn't be appropriate. So a change in zoning district, you know, while it gives a lot more flexibility to an owner to do a lot of different things, I think it's a more difficult decision for you all to change a zoning district because you don't know what's going to ultimately be there. A developer could say, I'm going to put X there, but once the zoning is approved, Y could go there. Here, if you grant a conditional use, there's only one project we can do, and it's that one.
A couple of questions, Mr. President.
Charlotte.
Either one can answer. Currently, you mentioned you've got 1,000 members, and how large is your current facility?
The current facility is 10,000 square feet.
10,000.
That's right.
So it's basically 10 square feet per member.
That's right.
So, and you are obviously doubling, but you're doing a whole lot more than doubling your square footage. You're, you know, going from 10,000 up to 56,000.
Right.
You are changing your business model of sorts, or you're doing something different.
Well,
as it relates, what's going on within the building?
Right.
So could you share, please, what you've got going now as it relates to what you were being proposed to do?
What's going on now is that we have programs stacked on top of each other. So, for example, when the Parkinson's folks come in to work out, we have to shut down a racquetball court often because they have to be in there to have their class. We have one group fitness classroom. And so we're limited in the options that we can give to our members because we only have one. And it doubles not only as a group fitness class, but the spin classroom and the Parkinson's classroom, you know, when we can. And when we can't, it goes to the racquetball room. The racquetball courts are very popular. We have two now, and we'd like to have four. And then a huge amount of the footprint, obviously, or a significant amount of it, is the pool area, which we don't currently have.
Okay. And then can you talk about what your current percents are versus what the proposed numbers are? I'm curious because I know you are presenting this as a therapy, as in a facility beyond just a gym. I mean, just a gym rat, that expression, if you would. So I'd like to, you know, talk to me more about that because, again, you know, the booklet, you know, Gateway Motion and Fitness, just by the title alone, but you're presenting it more of a from a medical position versus something other. So talk to me about that, please.
Okay. So we really see our vision is that it would be both a gym and a therapy center. And we say a therapy center, we mean for those folks with Parkinson's. The population here in Sussex County is obviously a retired population and they're aging. And as all of us age, if some folks say if you live long enough, you're probably going to develop some form of Parkinson's. So it's a huge problem coming at us. And we're living longer, so more people are experiencing the disease. Off the top of my head, I don't have the numbers with to share with you, but we completely underserve the population in Sussex County who suffer not only from Parkinson's but other movement disabilities, multiple sclerosis, and even some brain injuries, and folks with other. We have a gentleman who was in the military who is with us. He's in the CCMD programs, but the CAPE Center for Movement Disability Programs. But he, his injury came from jumping out of a helicopter, so it's not any of those things. It's something totally different. We think that if we had an accessible facility and that if that facility had multiple ways of providing therapy, being aquatherapy as well as the other things that we already have, that we could probably pick up that extra 1,000 members almost exclusively in that population.
And also, I'm curious on the numbers because you keep mentioning members. Now, when you say members, I'm thinking of your normal community gym, i.e. You pay a monthly fee or an annual number, whatever the arrangement is, and you're a member, and you can show up as you choose. The Parkinson's are not really members, right? They're patients, if you would. And they're not paying a monthly fee, I presume. I don't know. You tell me. But they're being referred to you by a medical doctor of sorts, I presume. And so they're coming as a patient and not necessarily as a member. So give me that comparison, please.
Right now, I believe we have 50 folks that are in the program. We had a much larger program until half of it moved out.
50 as in referred to you as a from a doctor.
I can't
referred from a medical profession.
Yes, referred, and because they meet some kind of movement disability.
So 50 of the current 1,000.
That's correct.
Very small percent.
That's correct.
So I ask this because you're presenting this predominantly as a medical physical therapy facility. Mm-hmm. So of the 2,000 proposed members, what do you perceive as being that number going from 50 to what?
I really believe we're going to be up in the hundreds, and maybe it wouldn't be the full 1,000 that, you know, we talk about and fantasize about. But I think that we could easily get to 300 or 400 in a very short period of time.
And that number is not inclusive of the 2,000.
It is.
It is inclusive.
We count them. They pay a membership, a monthly membership like everyone else. The only difference is they don't sign a contract with us.
Okay. I think that just helps the visual, if you would, as it relates to that. Okay, I think that's all I have at this moment. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from council?
Oh. Anyone? I just want to address Mr. Burke's question. The area-wide study fee is $9,180, and they would also have to contribute to there's a project right up the road, right across from Kickin' Chicken, that whole intersection there. They got contributed at $23,471. But that's a DLDOT project that's they would have to contribute to. That's being, should be constructed here shortly.
You know, just the reason I ask you that is that I look at this, you know, I was looking at 67,000 square feet in comparison to the 75,000 square feet of the Townsend property that was proposed. And there's a light, and there's turn lanes, and there's sidewalks, and there's bike. I mean, there's just, for 7,500 square foot less of commercial, right, there seems to be a lot more development improvement in that area that this is not providing, and it's the square foot's very similar.
Yeah, but it's a whole different land use too. This letter, which, you know, Janelle has it on the file, and I apologize you don't have it, but yeah, I mean, we met with DLDOT on four different occasions based on this, and providing, you know, all the traffic data that they've requested, that intersection at DLDOT's actually in the process of starting here soon. I mean, it would have to be, you know, the developer would have to contribute to that as part of some other improvements that are required.
Is that letter in old book, new book, future book?
Well, it's in the old book. It's not in a new book. I thought it was going to be, so I'd apologize for that.
It is on the file.
It is on the record.
You don't have it here.
No, but the fact that you don't have it at your desk doesn't mean it's not part of the record legally. Yeah.
I do recall my other question that I was going to ask, and that was the occupancy. I mean, of the newly proposed size of the building, 56,000, what's the occupancy size? Does anybody have that information? Because I...
Fire Marshal, where is he? He'll tell you.
And what was being proposed is, the new number is 200, right? Again, just it's 200 parking spaces, correct? So it's 200, but we don't know what the occupancy. So I mean,
you're going to keep the record open, and if you are, I'll try and get that number and submit it to the record as soon as I.
So with 2,000 members, what happens if, you know, 500 show up with 200 parking spots?
We come in with bus.
That's a great question. I don't have an answer to, but we.
That's my job, is to ask very good questions.
Well, you're doing a good job.
Okay.
When DLDOT came to do the traffic count, what they did is they looked at how people come in and out of the gym now, because you have to scan in and scan out, and we could give them printouts of any day they picked, and they could see who came in at what time, and so that's how they estimated their flows. With 1,000 members right now, there's never any, I mean, 100 cars would be a rare day. The parking always seemed absurd to all of us. No one argued that based on our number now.
DLDOT, they actually monitored your flow of current traffic at your current facility. So where's the peak? Talk to me about your peaks of flow during the day, times, and as it relates to that.
So right after work is our heaviest part of the day, and right now, because most of our Parkinson's members do most of the classes, because we only have so few of them, we get a peak around 10 o'clock in the morning on most days, and then again around between 4 and 7 at night.
So after 7 o'clock, is it fair to say that the medical piece is probably...
We don't offer any of the Parkinson's programming after... I don't think we do anything after 1:30 or 2 o'clock, and I could check with you.
Okay, and so then you're talking the normal gym folks that are coming in after that up until whatever timeline that could be closed.
That's correct.
Okay.
Are there any other questions of counsel?
You've been very attentive. Thank you very much for your time, and we do respectfully request your approval.
Thank you. Is there anyone here who would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 2074 filed on behalf of